And boom goes the dynamite. And boom goes the dynamite.
And welcome to episode 27 of Boom Goes the Dynamite, the AEW Dynamite review show here on the Pro Wrestling Only podcast network. I'm Jeffrey. With me tonight, special guest, the voice of NPR for the Pro Wrestling Only podcast network. He is the host of the Military Industrial Suplex. Please welcome Tom Batista. Tom, how are you holding up in these difficult times?
I am holding up very well. Thank you very much for bringing me on, and I know this has been a long time coming with so many of the people that eventually I get on my show, but, you know, I wanted to get with you so many, just so much, and here we are. It's yeah, not Kaiju Big Battle.
It's not.
It's Dynamite.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk some Kaiju Big Battle on your show sometime.
You will.
Well, I'll make that promise. So
the only thing we need to do, WrestleMania 37 or 38, whatever it may be, Kaiju Big Battle, I'll buy all the drinks, I'll buy all the food, you just need to show up, and then we have to record right after.
Okay, I'm down. I'm down for that. We could do this.
The only situation.
So the usual first question I always ask is, did anybody watch Dark? And my answer lately is, no, I have not watched Dark in the last 6 weeks. So did you see Dark?
I did not.
Dark, okay, well then.
A hard product in this time to follow. I mean, there's so much going on and you kind of want to focus on the, it's so weird to say, but you want to kind of focus on the essential wrestling, even though we're in a very inessential time, or however you want to phrase it or word it or see it.
Right.
But no, I haven't. I didn't see it.
Okay. Cool. Neither did I. So moving on.
The guy of Dark is going to be disappointed. Tune out right now. Turn off the episode.
So, all right. So in that case, we don't exactly go live to episode 27 of AEW Dynamite, because as we all know, that the shows are not live now. They are being pre-taped. They were, I guess they taped weeks worth of material, and it's either in somewhere in Florida, somewhere in Georgia. I don't even know where they're filming this anymore.
It appears that it's at QT Marshall's gym in Georgia.
Oh my goodness.
At first I thought they would film it at the Hardy compound and just get away with that, but apparently it's at QT Marshall's gym, and people recognized that it was his gym due to the green floral pattern carpet, the fake AstroTurf.
I did see that. So okay, so it's QT Marshall's gym. I misattributed last week's episode to still being in Jacksonville, but you know what? I don't think anybody cares at this point. Anyway, episode 27 of AEW Dynamite, and we start off directly with a video promo with Jake Roberts. Thankfully, he didn't get quite so rambly this time, but he took a real shot at Marco Stunt, though.
Oh, yeah, he definitely took a shot at Marco Stunt. You know, one of the things that I love about Jake Roberts and that I just love about AEW, and one of the things that I said about WWE for a very long time, you have all these guys that are great promos, great at characters, great at really connecting that emotional tether or making that emotional connection, if you will, to millions of people, and they've done this for decades. These are the people that you bring in full time. These are the guys that you bring in and you say, okay, who's vanilla? Who can't cut a promo? Who needs something that brings them to the upper echelon, or maybe not even the upper echelon, but just a level above? And you have the guys like Jake Roberts. And WWE, for the most part, brought these guys in to wave to the crowd or do a vanity promo or whatever it may be, but not really get new talent over. And so to see Jake Roberts with Lance Archer, and Lance Archer, all the tools. He has all the tools. All the tools. It's amazing. But, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, what we're seeing with Jake Roberts, like I said, it's beautiful. I don't want to rant. I don't want to overtake your podcast. But it's awesome. I love to see it. We need more Jake Roberts. We need more Lance Archer putting people like Marco Stunt. And this is the thing about pro wrestling right now. There was someone and a few people online just recently that were saying, oh, hey, this isn't progressive. This isn't that. It's like, no. This isn't about being progressive. This is about pro wrestling. Lance Archer needs to kill Marco Stunt in the ring and people like Marco Stunt in the ring forever.
Yeah, I did see that thread, and oh boy, I just decided I wanted no part of that whole debacle. I was like, you know, I'm trying to learn to stay out of things, you know, when I know it can lead to no good. But
you are very smart. Unlike myself, I have at multiple times assumed pro wrestling Twitter would straighten itself out, but it has not. So
no, it never does. But back to Jake Roberts. He wasn't rambling this time. Although the last line, "Are you man or mouse? Squeak up!" I was like, "Oh shit, that was good." That when he was taunting Cody Rhodes at the end of the promo. But with that, we transition to QT Marshall's gym. Your hosts for this week, Tony Schiavone and Chris Jericho, Les Champions. And I was really excited about Jericho being on commentary. And then within 30 seconds, he almost makes me regret that. As we get into our first match with Lance Archer, basically squashing the fuck out of Adam Engels, who I guess is an alumni of CWF Mid-Atlantic, who was the internet indie of choice for a little bit there, if you remember, in 2016, 2017.
Oh yeah, definitely CWF Mid-Atlantic. So many people were there. Trevor Lee, and then of course shout outs to listeners of this podcast and people that have been a part of the wrestling community in so many ways. Steve and Cecil and JB and just so many people. With CWF Mid-Atlantic, we do it right.
Yeah. So, as I was saying regarding Chris Jericho, though, within 30 seconds of the match starting, he made me regret looking forward to him when he referred to Lance Archer being in the Orient, and I just was like, oh God, no. Why did you do this?
You know, when Top Ramen renames their seasoning package from Oriental to soy sauce, you should probably get away from the Orient. I think that, you know, in 2020, the whole, you know, everything secret and special and all this other stuff in the Orient is, you know, we should mainly attribute it to the
hella racist. Yeah,
it's very racist, man. It's one of my, you know, I have a lot of Asian friends, and I don't like to refer to it as the Orient, wherever they're from.
I was told I was broken of that back in the 90s. In, you know, taking Japanese classes, I was really broken of that. But yeah, and I know that this isn't the first time that's been dropped on an AEW show, because I remember Jim Ross did it. I think it was at the episode of Dynamite I was actually at, so I didn't actually hear it, but I was told. But in the meantime, back to the match. This was a complete squash. That choke slam suplex that Archer did on Adam Engels Oh, Lordy.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely beautiful. That is the way that you squash your jobber. That is the way that you prove dominance. That is the way that you advance storylines. That is the way that you set a character. That is what is needed. People call all elite all petite. And when it comes to the jobbers, all petite is fine. Lance Archer did what he needed to do, and it was effective. I loved it.
You know, I've never heard the all petite, but considering how they have some absolute behemoths in there now, considering, you know, Archer, Brody Lee, who we're going to talk about here, Luchasaurus. Yeah, it's yeah. there are some big folk in AEW too.
Oh yeah, no, they're definitely starting to get big, and I hopefully, I sound like Tobias Fouquet at this point, but I hopefully they get bigger. But like I said, I want to see the AEW roster grow. One of the things that, and on my podcast, I spoke to Al Getz, I spoke to Charles, and just so many other people. Charles from ProWrestlingOnly.com, and just so many people. And one of the things they want to see is pro wrestling return to that that element of realism, where it's two guys fighting it out, trying to decide who's the better performer, or not the better performer, but the better fighter. Who's going to win? Who's going to go to the pay window? Who's going to take care of their family? And guys like Lance Archer, Brian Cage, Jeff Cobb, a lot of these guys add to that element. Obviously, there's certain aspects of their performance or what they give. I hate to say performance, but what they deliver that kind of takes back from that. But I would like to see more emphasis from All Elite Wrestling, more so focused towards the NWA, that aspect of that technical wrestling, hard-hitting stakes, not the drama and the melodrama, if we will, the telenovela, which NXT has become in some respects with Shawn Michaels. But I'm not going to take over your podcast, Jeffrey.
The next match maybe kind of fulfilled that that desire, as we go to Hikaru Shida versus Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. Before we get too far into this, I'm just going to say this was by far the best performance that Britt Baker has done in AEW, and this was probably the best match of the night by far.
100%. Britt Baker, and you and I, and you've spoken to this, or rather you've had this conversation with Chris and other guests on Boom Goes the Dynamite. And you've had this on social media as well. This isn't a hot take at all. Britt Baker is terrible. She is very middle of the road, no personality, vanilla. And it is absolutely amazing that all it took was for her to go heel. That's it. That's all she had to do. Britt Baker is one of these workers, in my estimation, that conned herself into believing that work weight was everything. And she found out that character was everything. And once she developed that character, once she started leaning into things, once she started understanding and really getting the psychology, it's not about the work anymore. It's about the promos, it's the characters, it's about seeing, okay, where does this go?
You know, the thing is, though, is that you say that, but ironically, it was against the work rate type wrestlers, like, you know, well, let's face it, pretty much most of the imports from Japan, or, you know, Chris Statlander, it was there that she was really failing.
Oh yeah, no, that you're 100% right. That is where she was failing, because she was exposed. She was exposed to show that, hey, is she a good worker? Sure. Is she as good as a worker as these other world-renowned talents that have, you know, gone not generations, but rather through different promotions and different women, et cetera, et cetera. No, she wasn't. And that was the main problem with her. She was fine as a worker. I think that now she's really focusing on, because she has to focus on, that character aspect. And I think that's why she is currently winning.
Right. Now, there was some good character work in there, like when she did that guillotine. What is it? We all call it the Famouser, but yeah, she does that, and then immediately taunts Billy Gunn with it. It's like, that is good. That was good.
It will always be the Famouser at this point, which is kind of sad at some points, because you see Dolph Ziggler doing that, and you say, why is this guy's favorite wrestler Billy Gunn? But yeah, she did the Famouser. She did it well. And, you know, like I said, I've been a Britt Baker critic for 2 to 3 years. I have never been a fan of her. I see that she's building something substantial. If she relies more on her character versus her work, she's going to be a star. She's doing what AEW wanted her to do a year ago. She's doing it now. Now's the time. So I'm very interested to see where she goes.
Okay. Of course, you know, during the course of the match, Britt got her nose legit busted. And that really played into the match. But, oh, geez, you know, blood play during a global pandemic. Yeah, maybe not the best time to be doing that, but regardless, regardless of this, it added to the match.
It definitely did. I mean, there's no one who can say that it didn't add to the match. It didn't make it more engaging in some way, especially when we start to take a look at the kayfabe and non-kayfabe aspect of it. I mean, this isn't 1992 where someone busts their nose and, oh no, they're bleeding. It's, oh shit, they're bleeding during a global pandemic. So it takes it to another level. It's breaking the fourth wall, even though they decided not to. And it, again, it just adds to Britt Baker's character. Like, this is character, Jeffrey, character. Right. And I'm really appreciating that she is leaning into that, because that was my biggest criticism of her for a very long time, was just that she has no character. And now she's doing it, and she's leaning into the bloody nose like Becky Lynch did so long ago. Hopefully it takes her to the stars.
In the end, Hikaru Shida, you know, confirms her number one ranking in the AEW women's division with it wasn't quite a shining wizard. It was just a, you know, running knee strike to get the pin. Good match, highly recommended by me. Yeah. And it's rare that I will recommend a Britt Baker match, but, you know, take it while you can, because this match was totally worth it.
Well, if we're going to recommend Britt Baker matches, let's do the four-way. Some time ago, this was, I believe, at the Daily Center, a four-way. It was Nyla Rose, Rio, Britt Baker, excuse me.
Oh, yeah. That was a good one. I know the one you're talking about. That was a good one.
I loved that match. The four-way. The way it was laid out. None of it felt contrived. It all flowed. It flowed, Jeffrey. It was amazing. I loved that match. Everything had urgency. It moved to the next stage without issue and without a bunch of contrived bullshit. And I, listen, I'm not Stephen Graham or any of these guys that, you know, love women's wrestling to the highest extent. But for me personally, if I had to make a top 10 of the matches of the last 2 years, as far as multi-women matches are concerned, that is up there. That was beautiful. I loved it. And so as far as Britt Baker's best performance, I go with that. But yeah, Sheeta, you know, I love Sheeta. She's great. I wish that I see her on Instagram or rather Twitter, I should say, sometimes, and she's singing Sam Smith and all these other guys I don't know, and she's, you know, oh, I have soul, and it's like, no, let's let's get some real soul in there, Sheeta. Like, I know you're, you know, I see what you're doing, but let's get some real soul in there. So that's my only I guess criticism of Sheeta, is she needs to listen to Little Richard. So take that for what that's worth.
I'm just gonna throw it out there that I think my favorite Japanese wrestler listening to music on Twitter has to be Big Japan's Yuji Okabashi, because he always posts like a lot of old punk and oi records he's listening to. It's like, oh shit, I used to have that. Fuck, you know.
He sounds like Daniel. He sounds like Daniel, man. Daniel Lockaby does the same thing, where he posts all these great music. I'm like, yeah, you know, this is pretty good. This is speaking to me. This probably shouldn't be speaking to me at the age that I am right now,
Right.
it's speaking to me, man. I kind of hate that you shared it, because it's, you know, I'm kind of reflecting on my life right now. But you know.
Following that, we go to a video promo between Kenny Omega and Michael Nakazawa, where they're trying to come up with a name for their team, and of course, Michael Nakazawa comes up with Best Friends, which leads to another shock appearance by Orange Cassidy, raising the ire of the actual best friends, Trent Beretta and Chuck Taylor. Oh boy, this was not bad. I kind of was amused by this, mostly because, just, you know, Orange Cassidy appearing out of the bathroom anywhere, anytime is gonna pop me.
It's unbelievable that a guy who does the least amount of work gets the biggest pop. But the least amount of work is always the biggest amount of work,
Oh
because
yeah.
it resonates to the crowd.
Right. But then
Oh.
again, when he did it, when he did do his work though, oh boy,
Oh
in that
yeah.
match against Pac, so
Oh
who
yeah, that's the
I am really starting to miss Pac and El Triangulo de la Muerte, because, you know, I as I'm sure you figured out, I'm a huge fan of the Lucha Bros, so.
Oh. And that's the beautiful thing about Orange Cassidy. Less is more. I remember speaking to PCO on one of my podcasts.
I remember
And
that show.
I spoke to PCO, and he's told me more is more. And I have very few regrets in my, I guess, interviewing profession or whatever you want to call it. But I wanted to really press him on that, as far as, what do you mean more is more? I feel like less is more. And I felt like that was the time to really have the conversation and really begin to explore less is more versus more is more mentality, and just really see where everything is. And we really didn't get to go into that. And I kind of regret that. But going with what you're saying is that, you know, less is more, more is more. It is what it is, I guess, at the end of the day.
Right.
And that doesn't really settle anything. And to me, that's kind of frustrating, because I guess when I watch pro wrestling, I want some sort of absolute. I want some sort of definition. I want some sort of finality. And I guess when it's all left into, hey, it's however you interpret it, it's like, oh, yeah, but. And that's the problem that I have, I guess.
So after that, we go to a commercial break and come back, and we have a commercial for the Young Bucks book, which, yeah, well, it is what it is, as you mentioned. We then also get the AEW rankings, Which, again, I don't care. I mean, I'm glad that they're committed to this rankings gimmick, but it'd be, it's just, you know, it's whatever to me. And then we get the first of two Jon Moxley versus Jake Hager feud recaps and promos. And Jake Hager.
Well, I know Jake Hager's your favorite, but we have to step back, my man. We have to step back. The Young Bucks book. You do not get to gloss over that fact. They say in their promo that they wanted to create a wrestling fed with their friends. Fast forward to AEW, and that's what it is.
Well, that much is true, but it was because of I think that one thing that, you know, gets glossed over for very obvious reasons in AEW is that it was because of one of their other friends why they got to be where they are today. And of course, you know, that friend, of course, can't be mentioned on AEW programming. Because, you know, he's kind of sort of under a New Japan Pro Wrestling contract, so.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that didn't really, although that didn't really stop Jericho today from constantly name-dropping New Japan or DDT, so.
Oh, no. Jericho is far beyond everyone's payroll, even Tony Khan, so he says whatever he wants. So whenever Jericho, honestly, Jericho was on commentary tonight, and I thought he was going to go Nash Thunder 1999 shoot. So I was expecting that. So we got
give him a chance. He might still do.
Give him a chance.
We then transition into the first of two Cody Rhodes versus Sean Spears video promos, and oh god! And this starts one of the more disturbing trends of the evening, which is way too much Sean Spears, as we're going to see in this next match, in which Kenny Omega and Michael Nakazawa take on best friends. Sean Spears is on the sidelines, of course, cheering on Michael Nakazawa because he's, you know, quote, scouting him. Jesus Christ, that was like the most cringy thing about this match, and this is in a match that has Michael Nakazawa and Baby Oil.
Yeah.
Sean Spears, as we've said on this program many times, has to be one of the buyer's remorse wrestlers of Tony Khan.
The funny thing about Sean Spears, and again, this goes kind of back to Young Bucks hiring their friends, is that if I'm starting a wrestling promotion and I'm friends with Sean Spears and I'm friends with QT Marshall, I want to have him in backstage roles. I don't want to have him in the ring. When you advertise someone as, well, they're a good hand, well, that's what people are going to see them as, a good hand.
Right.
QT Marshall, Sean Spears. You know, are these guys that, listen, I've never taken a bump in my life. I've never been to a wrestling class. If I went to a wrestling class where Sean Spears and QT Marshall were the head coaches, would I be comfortable going to it? Absolutely. But we're not talking about going to wrestling class. We're not talking about the basics. We're talking about primetime wrestling with the elite and the top of their game, everyone performing at the top. And I think having QT Marshall and Sean Spears featured in the way that they're featured is actually in some way a negative to the product. Again, you can have jobbers. I'm not saying don't have jobbers, Jeffrey. I'm not saying that. But fuck.
I think that's the most you've ever sworn.
I try not to swear, but it's like
the match itself, however, was actually really fun. I really enjoyed this match.
It was good.
You know what? I'm just gonna go say, you know what? This is the third week in a row we've had a Kenny Omega match, and I was not cringing at Kenny Omega, and the fact that this was a comedy match made it better because comedy Kenny is my favorite Kenny.
The funny thing about Kenny Omega, and I've said this in my podcast and with other people as well, is that Kenny Omega is this postmodern wrestler that operates in his own style that works for him. And when anyone else tries to do it, it just fails. It falls flat. Nobody gets it. It doesn't resonate. And for me, again, less is more. And when I see Kenny Omega beginning to trail, or not necessarily trail back, but more so get into, I don't want to say mainstream, but definitely into a mindset of what people can easily grasp. And that's when he is going to become bigger in America than what he was in Japan. When you see, or rather when a person sees Kenny Omega walking, you know, through the streets of Japan looking completely bored, that doesn't necessarily get them
excited. Oh, the mope walking?
Yeah. That doesn't get them excited. That doesn't let them know who he is.
Yeah.
Now that the AEW footage has started, you know, gathering, for lack of a better term, people understand who he is. And so I hope they begin to build off of that, because like I said, the guy who is obsessed with Japan, listen, that's not a personality trait. That's not a personality trait in the dating world. That's not a personality trait in the real world. And that's not a personality trait in the wrestling world. There's so many guys who are trying to get by on, I have a black belt, or I've been to Japan, or I have all the Bruce Lee movies on my DVD, and I have a mattress on my floor. And they're trying to pass that off as a personality, and it's not. And I think that Kenny Omega is at a very interesting apex in his career, where he's trying to transition from, hey guys, I'm the weeb, to no, hey, I'm American, or excuse me, not American.
Yeah, he's definitely not American.
He's not American. He's Canadian, but
he's Canadian, yeah.
Trying to transition that from, hey guys, I'm a weeb, to no, hey, I'm Kenny Omega.
Yeah, I just always preferred comedy Kenny, and then when he, you know, anime supervillain, you know, corny laughter, I mean, that popped me. But you know, when, you know, the whole 6-star rating and the best bout machine, it was like, well, you know what, I've litigated this so much on other shows, other episodes of this show, and of course Strong Style Story as well. So moving on, the point is, best friends get the win, strong zero on Nakazawa, and Sean Spears is so done with Michael Nakazawa, which, okay, cool dude. We then go to a whole string of promos and commercial breaks. We get a Brody Lee video promo where he's still doing his Vince McMahon pastiche, and oh God, it's 3 weeks in and I'm already done with this shit.
Yeah, the problem is that this is what TNA did. And one of the things that I don't understand about these promotions is that when you have $1 billion, when you have $1 million behind you, stop talking about Vince.
Yeah.
Just stop.
Nope, like, I'm with you. No. I'm totally with you.
You and I know the stories. We listen to the shoots. We hear the podcasts. But when you start basing your entire gimmick, your entire meaning, your entire being on Vince McMahon and what he says and does, it begins to make your promotion look like second rate. We saw this with WCW. We saw this with TNA. I don't
we've
know
even
why.
We've even seen this with WWF.
Yeah,
let's be honest.
Yeah, you're right. We even saw this with WWF. So it's one of these things where, again, less is more. Less is more. You don't have. We know Vince McMahon is an asshole. We know he's a racist. We know he's this and that. He doesn't like sneezing. We get that. But we want to know who you are. Brody Lee, who are you outside of Vince McMahon? Because everything that you're telling me right now is that Vince McMahon, whether he employs you or not, defines you.
Yeah.
Want to get past that.
After that, we go to another commercial break. We come back, and we have a another promotion for the Autism Inclusion T-shirt that AEW is selling, along with Culture City. I just want to shout out, once again, the fact that they're doing this, not with Autism Speaks. That makes me very, very happy. So just want to throw that out there. Because I think Autism Speaks is evil. So we then get a brief Britt Baker promo, still with some blood on her face, and I mean, she kind of, you know, took another jab at, oh well, even if you did break my teeth, I could fix my own teeth, so, because I'm a dentist, ha ha. It's like, okay, all right, thanks. But and then we get another John Moxley, Jake Hager. Oh, God, I'll be so happy when this match happens next week.
I know you were asking for, oh, God, if I can just get six more tonight.
Holy
I'll be
shit.
I'll be so happy.
And then we get a Matt Hardy promo. And speaking of 3 weeks in, I'm so done with this shit. Matt Hardy. Oh, my God.
You know, I think it was one of our co-hosts, one of our colleagues, Trevor Dane, for through the years, the RH retrospective podcast that goes episode from episode. I feel like I'm plugging him better than he does, but episode by episode. And, you know, he said what he said was that Chris Jericho is David Bowie. And Matt Hardy, he's the Beach Boys. He has that one song, Kokomo, that everybody loves, that everybody gets into. Despite having many other hits, that is his go-to, Kokomo.
Yeah, so that sounds like it's kind of underselling the Beach Boys just a little bit. But
Well, listen, I'm a fan of the Beach Boys, and if you want to turn this into a Beach Boys podcast, we can. So I'm throwing down the gauntlet. However, what I'm just trying to say is
Smile or GTFO. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. Yes. This is Matt Hardy's Smile, and he keeps fucking playing it.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, the act is already old. I'm sorry. I mean, it was cool in 2015, 2016.
Yeah.
But geez, yeah, I'm already over this shit. And again, this is, I mean, obviously AEW couldn't help what happened in the world situation to the point where it's you know, they couldn't do the blood and guts match when they wanted to. But yeah, I think, yeah, Matt Hardy's already overstaying his welcome.
Well, you know, the problem here is also that it's one of those situations where if you realize somebody is playing the same tunes, you can either A, say, hey, let's play something different, or hey, I don't want to hear that anymore.
Yeah.
I feel as though people are pretending as though there are, if we're going to go off of, again, Brian Wilson's Smile sessions, if we want to do that, I feel as though people are pretending that there's more into the archives. And it's like, no, this is the archives. This is it. This is all there is. There's nothing deeper. There's nothing, you know, there's no outtakes. There's not a hidden song. this is everything. You've heard everything.
Well, actually, you know, I came up with another comparison with this, even though the time scale is a little bit different. But you remember, like, in 1991, when U2 came out with Achtung Baby, and they all changed their look?
Yeah.
And then they proceeded, they still have that look now in 2020. Like, they haven't changed their look since 1991.
Yeah.
That here we are.
Oh God, we're referencing a bunch of 1990s fashion trends or music trends, and people are like, "Wait, what? Where are
this
they?"
This is not even.
Beach Boys isn't even 90s. Oh my God!
This is not even the nerdiest tangents we've gone on this show.
for all the listeners, I am 100 years old. If anyone's wondering.
So, coming out of that promo, we get to our fourth match of the evening. Brody Lee, the aforementioned Brody Lee, comes in and just squashes the bejesus out of Lee Johnson. This is the squash that Brody Lee should have done last week.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you talk about a guy who is coming in, you know, again, the weight and height above everyone else, when you talk about a guy who's coming in with a legit background, a veteran, this is the performance. And not only the performance, I hate to say performance, but this is the match. This is the fight that you expect him to see. This is what you want. You want him coming in kicking ass and taking names. You don't want him jobbing out, putting smiles on people's faces, and doing all this other silly shit. I mean, this is what it needed to be.
Of course, Marco Stunt getting it in both hours this week. Brody Lee kind of has a little stare down with Marco Stunt. And it's like, geez, poor Marco. He's just getting it today.
Marco is definitely a guy who, and he's playing his role. And, you know, God bless him. He's a guy who, for a lot of people, shouldn't be in the business. And when he's in the business, he shouldn't be in the role that he's in. But people forget that the role that guys like Marco Stunt should be in are the underdog role and the guy that, you know, just overcomes the odds in any aspect, even if he isn't the underdog. And he plays his role fine. And I love to see that he gets his ass beat, thrown around.
Have people not noticed that Marco Stunt has not won a single match that he's been in yet?
No, I don't think that's...
I'm just wondering that, you know, for the people who criticize, you know, Marco Stunt shouldn't be in there. He's in there. He's getting his ass kicked each and every time. Jesus Christ.
And that's kind of one of the things where you can see the intellectual dishonesty in some people. Like, not all people, but some people.
I mean, if Marco Stunt's name...
That Marco Stunt is there to get his ass kicked, to get thrown around, to get bullied, to be the underdog. That is Marco Stunt. Marco Stunt is not there to be a Goldberg type of character where he's running through everybody and winning the world title. What the fuck don't people understand?
Well, I just know that eventually we're the evolution of this is going to get to the point where we are going to finally get Marco Stunt's, you know, little Spike Dudley moment, you know?
And if we get his little Spike Dudley moment, that will be fine.
It will be
within context, it will be within character, and people will be behind it.
Yeah, guys, if you're that concerned about the fact that Marco Stunt's in the business, just pretend that his last name is Mulkey, and y'all be fine, okay? Just pretend his name is Mulkey. So, anyway. did that take a minute?
that took a minute with me. Hopefully it didn't take a minute with the listeners.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ, go ahead, Jeffrey.
We then get to another Cody Rhodes versus Sean Spears recap, leading into Cody Rhodes versus Sean Spears, the first round matchup for the still very ill-advised TNT Championship. I'm going to be honest with you. Second week in a row with a main event involving Cody Rhodes and Shawn Spears, I kind of sort of tuned out of this match. I got to be real frank with you.
No, I'm the same way. I did not give it. I'm going to be honest here. I don't care about Shawn Spears. I never did. When he was Gavin Spears, when he was Ty Dillinger, I always saw him as a guy who, again, as Cody said, a good hand. That's it. I am not watching professional wrestling to see guys who are good at training people. I'm just not. I don't care. That's my take.
Okay. Cody Rhodes won. I know everybody is shocked. That's the other thing. There was absolutely no drama to this. There was never any indication that Shawn Spears was going to pull an upset win on this. We all knew what was going to happen because they've laid out the path for Cody, because Cody has two different angles happening in this tournament alone between, him and Lance Archer and, of course, him and Darby Allin going back from last week. So, I mean, it's come on. There was no drama to this. There was no shock. Nothing was on the cards for that. So, Yeehaw, Cody Rhodes wins. He advances to face either Darby Allin or Sammy Guevara in the next round. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers. And with that, we end episode 27 of AEW Dynamite. This is the part, Tom, where we usually do the pros and cons. So your pros and cons of this episode.
The pros, the commentary, the feeling overall, the feeling of the atmosphere, the ambiance, if we will. That was very important. You know, one of the things about these arena shows, again, you have to compare AEW directly to WWE, and WWE is pretending as though there are still 10,000 people in the arena. Nothing's changed. It's the exact same format, and to see the minor differences in the AEW format is always a pro. The fact that people are having fun on commentary, as we saw, or rather as we heard, with Jericho and Tony Schiavone is great. The fact that we see people experimenting and trying something new, even in nuance, is fantastic. AEW, despite the pandemic, despite the global situation happening, is on a good track. They're still on a good track. They haven't lost sight of characters and wrestlers working in a world where there are real concerns, and it works for them. It's awesome.
What about, do you have any cons for this episode?
As far as cons are concerned, I hate to sound like an AEW shill right now, but there's not a lot of cons I have. I guess if I had to say something, let's tone down just a little bit on the self-serving. So someone like Sugar Dunkington, who I love, who I like, I listen to his podcast. I would like to see less of, hey guys, I was in the crowd and I was making my dreams come true. I guess that's more of a inside baseball type of criticism in some respect, but I guess I would like to see less of that, of the gratitude error. People just excited to be there regardless of what they're making, regardless of whether they have union labor rights, whether they have health care, paid sick time leave, the whole nine yards. Maybe that's a you know, save that for your Bernie podcast or your Bernie Sanders podcast, okay?
Well, you know, I mean, I tend to go, you know, even on Strong Style Story, I tend to get, you know, a little real world sometimes myself. So, going through my pros and cons this week, first of all, the pros, the Hikaru Shida versus Britt Baker match, absolutely must watch. I also really enjoyed Kenny Omega and Michael Nakazawa versus Best Friends. I never thought I would say I enjoyed a Michael Nakazawa match in AEW, but no, that was some good comedy in my opinion, and I think that's well worth a watch too. Chris Jericho as a commentator was good, except for the very, very rocky start, dropping a pretty much a racist as hell comment. Maybe he didn't. It could have been inadvertent. I don't know, but it was still racist as hell. So there's no excusing it. The cons, there was way too much Sean Spears. We did not need two recaps of Mox and Hager. I am done with Matt Hardy, and I'm done with Brody Lee doing a Vince McMahon pastiche.
So that's funny that you say Chris Jericho, because I can only remember the Ace Frehley reference,
which transitioned into a Gene Simmons reference. You might, because yeah. You know what, that's a deep cut. Because you might recall, long time ago on WCW Monday Nitro, Tony Schiavone outed himself as a huge Kiss fan. So.
Yes, and not only that, but Chris Jericho interviewed Paul Stanley on his podcast on Talk Is Jericho. I'm a Kiss fan, so I actually popped for that.
We've had some discussion about some of the other guests Jericho has had on his podcast. So. All right, Tom, thank you very much for stepping in tonight. Go ahead and plug yourself.
Of course. The Miller's. Jeffrey, it's after Dynamite, so it's always fun. But the Military Industrial Suplex here on the Pro Wrestling Only Network, here with Boom Goes the Dynamite, Days of Thunder, Greetings from Allentown, Shimmer History, World Cast, and so many more. So many new podcasts popping up.
Yeah, let's not forget the return of the WorldCast now. I'm very happy about that.
I actually broke that on my podcast with Johnny Sorrow. I guess Kelly texted him while we were recording to let him know. And so WorldCast is back. It's here. It's ready for everyone. And yeah, like I said, the Pro Wrestling Network, Military Industrial Suplex. If you want to follow me, I do a lot of interviews with a lot of people in and around the world of pro wrestling. So wrestlers, commentators, pundits, fans, the whole nine yards. It's always fun. I try not to do a powder puff interview with people for the most part. And I hope you like it. And thank you, Jeffrey, for having me here.
Of course, yeah. We've been trying to get together for a while now. You can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. My personal Twitter is at GD Wessel, 2 S's 1 L. I already plugged the return of the WorldCast, so I'm also going to plug the return of Strong Style History back after a two-year absence. Myself and Lawrence, we went over four old New Japan matches that are posted to the front page of NJPW World, and we're looking to do more of this. So stay tuned for that. Hopefully we'll get one done this weekend as well. So check that out. And thanks for everybody who's given us some good commentary about the show, too. So we appreciate it. So, Tom, any last words?
No last words, my friend.
All right, brother. Well,
you didn't say it all.
All right. Well, as long as Dynamite's going on, we'll be here too. So I guess with that in mind, we'll see you next week.